Hi there, my name is Hannah Sharmi. This is the What is Fromcast podcast on the Podcastica Network.
Welcome to the show. My name is Alex.
And I'm Lizzie.
And we have our special guest that needs no introduction, but we're going to introduce him anyways. You know him as Frank. We all know him as Bob. Bob, man, thank you so much for joining us.
What a time. What a time to be alive.
I'm telling you.
Season two.
I'm telling you, I know we had to do a lot to pull you away from Canada Day festivities. Oh boy.
Is that what today is?
That was yesterday.
No, it was yesterday, but we celebrate well into October.
Okay.
Here in Canada, we don't stop.
It's just every day is Canada Day.
We need a month and a half to recover.
Well,
my God.
I have a very good friend that lives in Quebec, and I keep telling her, you guys are going to take us over with Zamboni technology. It's all about the Zamboni technology.
Oh yeah, as we slowly and methodically make our way across the border in our Zambonis.
Absolutely. And for those of you that are watching the show, thank you so much. And the fans, and if you'd like to subscribe to our channel, that would be even better. Right down there or there. I don't know, whatever it is. It is Sunday, so that means it is from day, and we are talking from the show has stopped or is in hiatus for a couple of months or so, as the kids like to say. But we're still going. We're still going. Just a couple of little things. If you haven't checked out our merch shop, you can get these nice Frumily shirts. I know Bob is in for at least 10 for all of his family.
Easily.
And you can look at the show notes or check out that link right there. And so, Bob, what is your first thoughts of this season?
My first thoughts, I guess it depends on what perspective I'm coming at it from, because as an actor who was on the show and who knows a number of people still involved and gets to see people, it was a thrill to see some people come back after, you know, it was really cool to see Lisa Ryder, you know, pop
yeah
back
she's
up.
Great
it's like
she's
yeah
great.
You know, like, you kind of hope you get to see her again. My buddy Reed Price, who's Tom the bartender, getting to see him unceremoniously dispatched, but then get to pop up again, The Shining style.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. And seeing, and also getting to see some of the fans kind of react to that. That was fun, of course. And then Sean Majumdar, getting to see him again. That was a lot of fun. And the other thing I really loved, I will say, and this has nothing to do with the plot or anything like that, but I really loved seeing how much extra meat and how much extra time people got. I loved seeing Scott McCord, I think, is a really gifted performer, and getting to see him with extra stuff to chew on was a lot of fun. I thought he had some cool moments and some weighty bits. I thought Ricky had some cool little things to do, and some interesting scenes, and Harold. I just thought people had some interesting acting that they had to do, a little bit more weighty. And you know, my pal Nathan Simmons, who I've known for forever, who's just a lovely and gifted actor who here in Halifax, he, you know, getting to see the work that he did as Elgin, I thought was really, really neat too. I wish that, I wish that Phoebe Rex had been able to stick around a little bit longer. She played Sarah, who got the spike in the head.
I'm going to tell you right now, I think they missed the mark with her. I really think they missed the mark, because she, and we had her on the show. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that's right.
She had, and you know, you read the Facebook groups, for someone that was in one episode, she was more memorable than people that were there for multiple episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, she had such a good impact, and it would have been great to see someone like her and Julie kind of be friends. and see where that could have taken off or something else with the plot line. I think that they missed the mark on that, but I love what they did. It's just that it's just kind of a shame.
Yeah. I mean, I get it from a storytelling perspective. I mean, a story is not charity, right? Like a story is not something that you do for the purpose of giving characters to people or for just having a bunch of characters as a fun to look at. I mean, there has to be a purpose to everything. And if anything, I would say that the show probably affords a little bit more roadway and mileage to a number of characters who might show up and then be gone, you know, a la Walking Dead, Lost, stuff like that. Like you have opportunities for people to just kind of fly in and then go. And I appreciate that as a performer, because it means a show like this is going to have something for, you know, I mean, even me, I feel very fortunate and lucky to have gotten to be one of the first ones kind of out of the gate to be on there and have a little arc. And, you know, it comes to an end and, you know, you can lament that. But the fact is, you know, there's only so much for everybody, and to get something is kind of cool in and of itself, and get to do it and get to say that you were part of it. So I don't lament that. They would have had something. They only had meaningful opportunities and sort of plot service for each new character that came along. They only had a room for a few. It's already a pretty stacked.
Oh no. Yeah.
Yeah, it's already a pretty stacked roster, but I think they've done great by everybody that they've brought in. I thought there was some neat stuff that went down. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
So what are we drinking tonight, guys?
Name it. I got everything right here in my desk.
From Wawa.
Yeah, I got all the everything that I need.
I didn't do a good job of marketing cocktails with Bob Mann, but
yeah, I know. I showed up with my cocktail.
Is that what you do on Sundays? You get yourself a nice drink and you watch the show?
No. Well, no. I seldom drink, but I wanted to in honor of this.
Yeah.
I'd been looking forward to this glass all day. It's sangria.
Oh, you learned it.
And Bob, surely I think some of our listeners probably think that we do drink when we do this podcast. So it'd probably be better that we did drink, because I think, you know,
it would validate some of the
talk.
Exactly.
You know, I do want to dive in a little bit. Let's just talk about like the first episode or the first couple of episodes. And Lizzie, please jump in whenever you want to jump in.
Want to cut you off, then I'll get a nasty email.
Well, that's fine. You can go right ahead. That said, you know, what I love about this show is they really started where they left off. Like literally the moment they left off, they started. And it looks like this season was a couple of weeks, if it was that much.
I think it was like a week. I don't even think it was longer than a week.
Yeah, it was really, really strange on how quickly it was, you know. And so you were in this world for a little bit. And what I find really frustrating as a viewer is you're in this world. Nothing is normal. Boyd has a conversation with his son. And he's like, I went through a tree and I came out there. And Ellis is like, wait, let me get this straight. Now, this is coming from the same person that has to lock his door up. His monsters come out with a stone talisman. Like, how does that not like jive? I don't know. Maybe I'm just wrong.
It's an interesting thing. And I have given that a fair bit of thought. So one of the neat experiences that I had with season two was my youngest son, who's just like graduating high school this year. He just graduated last year. He's all caught up. He watched all of it from the beginning. And then we watched a little bit of it together, and it was kind of fun getting to see. And then sort of a little side note. We filmed the second season of King of Pawn,
which
had a bunch of stuff to it. And you know, Reed Price, who plays Tom, he was the lead. And I brought my son with me to on one of the shooting days just to kind of hang out. And he got to meet Reed. And it was interesting because I've known Reed for, you know, a long time, and we've done a number of projects together, but my son had never met him. So he was kind of starstruck. Like he'd watched he'd watched a bunch of it. It was his first time kind of meeting someone in person that he'd only, whose face he'd only known from television. It was kind of a neat experience. But he and I shared an interesting thought about on that particular note, Alex, and it was that, you know, I was sort of relating it to a show like Lost, where it takes kind of a long time for the characters in the world to realize that, or even clue into, or even accept that there are things going on that are out of this world.
Yeah.
And so naturally, you know, in that vein, in that context, when things are presented to them that appear to be out of this world, they have a disbelief, or they deflect from it, or they have other explanations. Some are pretty quick to say, oh, there's weird stuff happening. And then other people say, no, 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 you're mistaken. It's just this and this and that. Whereas in this show, I do think one of the challenges that the creators have sort of set up for themselves is that nobody, literally no person, should have any level of disbelief for any amount of crazy stuff that happens. I mean, don't you think? Like it just sort of like, it, right? Like if it went, so when it gets presented, you know, that, hey, there's a tree, and if you fall into it, you come out in maybe a different year or a different place. Literally to a person, every single person should go, yep, that checks out. I mean, what, like how much weirder can it get than it already is?
And right? First off, a couple of things before, I just want a little side note, folks, please put in the chat what you're drinking, because, you know, we don't like to drink alone, and we certainly don't want Liz to drink alone. And there's all 12 of you or 15 of you, whoever, how many decide to show up. And when we do start talking faraway trees and stuff like that, you need to be a little bit more loose with your thoughts.
Well, absolutely. You need to buy into it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to get into some lofty philosophical, you know, text here and go to some weird places. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
but no, I agree. I agree with you. I think it is. And I don't, I don't see things like that and think to myself, oh boy, have they ever messed up? I don't think that to myself. What I think is, oh boy, does that ever illustrate how challenging it is to, on the one hand, have really bizarre things happening in a world that's already bizarre, and have the characters behave in human ways that, you know, like really it does kind of move a character into some uncharted territory by having them accept through the gate that anything weird that happens can be believed, because then because that gets in the way of things like conflict and things like, you know, disbelief. I know I saw some of the memes and whatnot, you know, in those early episodes where Boyd and, Ian Bailey's character, Jim. Where Jim is saying, oh, I think I know what's going on here. I think I know what's happening. And Boyd's like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
I don't have time for this shenanigans and goings on, Jim. I've got, you know, I've got things to tend to, like goats to find or whatever. It was like, that was one of those moments where you're like, okay, you can't have everybody on the same page all the time, but on what basis are you going to have them not on the same page? That becomes a challenge in this show.
I swear, if there was a show that ever needed a communication intervention, it was this show with all the different people.
It's tough. It's hard.
There was going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I found myself on more than a few. I mean, I've done some writing. I found myself on more than a few occasions going, boy, there's some tough knots to unravel here. Like this would be tough to keep all these balls in play. And given that, I thought they did a good job on a lot of fronts. Like it, you know, given how much juggling there is to do, I thought, you know, I was pretty well entertained all the way through. I didn't have a lot of moments where, you know, I was like, whatever. I really didn't. I was right there with it all the way through. It's just an enjoyable mystery.
Well, I drink the Kool-Aid. I buy it all.
Sure. Like, yeah. Know, why not?
I mean, I could understand Ellis being like, wait a minute. You were in a tree and then you were here, because this place, you know, plays with the bounds of what we find normal, you know, and what we've found, you know, find in our everyday life. Like it does that, but it just seems like they're discovering things over and over. Like they're discovering new things all the time, you know, like God, I can't even think, like, just even the Phoebe Rex character, I think her name was Kelly, being impaled to a tree. They hadn't seen that yet.
Okay, yeah. First off, that was fucked up.
Oh, it's crazy, right?
But that was just, that was so messed up compared to what we've seen before.
Well, it was just, you know, it, what I really liked about the beginning of the season was being able to see it again through new people's eyes. Whereas the Matthews family arrive, they've got, you know, the accident of the RV to contend with and being stuck in the RV and, you know, like stuck at night and not understanding why they couldn't pull Ethan out and, you know, that they were playing with the sundown and stuff like that. And then Julie and Tabitha being up at Colony House, it just seemed like it went a lot easier when they showed up. But then when they were dealing with an entire busload of people that they had to contend with, I mean, it's a little bit easier, I think, to convince four people versus 25 people that are coming in 25 different directions. Like even the old couple that thought that they would be safe on the bus, you know, just being there. But watching the monsters come up to the couple and shake their hands, and the couple, you know, is like, okay, you know, this is nice. The first nice
new people,
that we've met that aren't crazy. And then, you know, we know that they get attacked right away. And we, you know, we watch the people in the diner as they're listening to this. And it's just, it's an interesting, it was interesting to watch that again and just to, you know, look at it through our own eyes, thinking, all right, so what different thing is going to happen this time around? How are these people going to behave? And then you've got Randall, who is not buying 1 ounce of this, regardless of what he's hearing going on outside, regardless of what he sees the next morning when they're out there trying to rescue Jim. I mean, there's poor Tom ripped to shreds. And it was just, I think it was a really strong opening for the show.
Well, I love the fact how that first episode, I mean, it wasn't rocket science. Every time they tried to dig, the house kept collapsing on. It was like it was pulling. And, Lizzie and I kind of know what we're doing. And we're speaking with Bob Mann here, who was on the show first season, our first three episodes, I think. And, you know, I know you're a writer as well as an actor, but was there anything that surprised you in the season that you were like, wow, that was really good? Or that was, you know, again, I'm just curious from your perspective as someone that's in the business, regardless that you were on the show, but like as someone that's in the business, was there a little plot twist, whether it was the music box or the worms or whatever? Was there anything in your eyes that you thought that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of that. Really, like when you think about it's a show that doesn't spend very much time laboring in what I guess would be the ordinary world of the show, right? So there's a version of this show where the ordinary world is where the characters are before they come into it. And the inciting incident. So, you know, the inciting incident for the Jim, for the family is coming into the town. It is. So we experience their story through there. But for a whole bunch of the other characters, the ordinary world is already being in the town.
Right.
Right.
And so the inciting incident have to be different kinds of things, right? It's the first death in 96 days, or it's whatever, right? But then as you go, you need more things to be happening that bring out conflicts and bring out stuff that happens. And really, like, you know, right from the get-go, you have this business of Sarah having something communicating with her. But as it turns out, the stakes just get raised higher and higher and higher as you go, as things like interdimensional travel or potentially traveling through time. I don't even know. We haven't even really had confirmed for us yet if that's even a thing. We're not 100% sure. But then you have this business of the worms and the cicadas and the box, like pieces keep getting added that make the that weave the thing into something increasingly more complex, to the point where you're not even really sure what the threat is. You're not sure if the threat is psychological. Is it like the monsters frankly almost seem to be somewhat quaint at this point. If all they had to deal with was the monsters, it wouldn't even really be that big of a deal. They've already gone 96 days in a stretch. You know, they've had a bad run of luck
in the last couple of weeks,
few weeks or whatever the time span of the show. And honestly, it's funny when you say maybe a week or two of second season, I don't think this first season covered that much time. No. I don't think we've been in this world very long. So if you think about it, the monsters are just sort of the thin edge of the wedge, so to speak. There's a whole bunch of other things going on that are really just, I would almost say there are a whole bunch of things that have just been introduced and we haven't even really gotten into the meat of it yet. And I know that that's to the frustration of some of the fans, and I can certainly appreciate that. But if each season was a section of a novel, you know, we'd be, yeah. I think we'd probably be maybe a third of the way in.
Yeah.
And hopefully that means we're going to get a lot more play at this point. With TV, that's tough, because you don't know how much roadway necessarily you have in front of you. So it's
tough. At any point. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, after watching the finale and thinking about it for the last week, I'm starting to think that it's a game. Like the whole music box piece with the worms and everyone seeing the music box, not everybody, but a lot of people seeing the music box that weren't there to get the worms. And then Boyd finally defeating the music box the Abby character. Like she was Abby when she first showed up to him when he's about to smash that music box. But if you listened carefully, her voice changed and her vernacular changed while she was talking to him. The more he seemed intent on breaking that box, the more she was intent on getting him not to. And when he broke the box, the game was over. They won that game, right? And then then there's Tabitha, who somehow is getting this message that she needs to save the children. And maybe she was on an express route or something that, you know, took her to the tower so that she could get pushed out and back into reality. But we don't know that she's in reality for sure. We don't know if she's just in another escape room at this point. We don't know. But I try not to get too heavy into the theories because they're so zigzaggy. It's hard to stay committed. You can't seem to, like, I'm a very linear person. I think it's because of teaching math. I'm not sure, but I'm a very linear person. And when something starts to, you know, go off in different tangents and I'm not seeing a pattern to it, I don't know how to process that.
So well, it goes back to what Jade said. You know, it feels like you're in the middle of a book and you don't know where they're starting, and you need the two pieces to kind of connect.
Well, that puzzle, yeah. And I don't, that's why I just don't commit to any of the theories.
It might not be. I mean, I you know, I do pop in and I take a look at what some of the fans say and some of the theories. And look, the theorizing is fun.
We're going to show some of it, because some of the people in the chat are actually going to, we're going to start talking about it too. So
sure. Yeah. And the theories are fun. I mean, one thing I do, and I would not want to dissuade anyone from theorizing.
If
theorizing is your bag, you know, go for it. Have a good time with it. Storytelling is not necessarily, a story is not the same thing as an escape room.
Right.
And an escape room can tell a story. And certainly anyone who's played RPG video games or these sort of things, there can be story elements and backgrounds to characters and things like that built into it. But a story is not necessarily a puzzle to be solved. A mystery isn't even necessarily a puzzle to be solved where you're looking for clues. I mean, it is interesting to me that there is that there's so many comparisons drawn between this show and Lost. I've watched Lost probably 5 or 6 times now. And I'm not a rewatcher, but it's because my kids have gotten into it and I've watched it kind of in tandem with them every time a new kid comes along and watches it. So it's been a fun experience. But one thing that has become very, very clear to me watching Lost a number of times is that if you watched Lost as a puzzle to be solved, it was unsolvable.
Yeah.
It was really unsolvable. If you sat down and you mapped out all of the clues that were given to you, there is a reveal at the end and in pieces near the end that tells you what things meant, but they weren't necessarily things that you would have been able to come up with a solution to. In a way, the story was actively trying to come up with something more interesting than the theories that a viewer might have come up with based on which way they chose to be misdirected. That's the magic of a really good story, is not to present you a room that you can escape from, but to present you with a room you can't escape from, and then have that moment where they say, here's how you could have got out, and you go, wow, you know, just be amazed by it. Well, I don't want to solve this show. I want to be amazed by whatever they come up with, and they hope they do. I don't want to come up with a better theory than what I'm served up with in the end.
To your point, somebody was saying on one of the Facebook groups, oh, this is a bad season, all this. And I'm like, what do you want them to do? Go home and the show is over?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, are you watching the same thing I am?
But that said, we do have a couple of theories that I want to throw at you. Okay.
Yeah. No, so I'm there for the theories. I think those are fun and I think they are cool. Yeah.
And there really is only one theory. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of red herrings, but this is the only one I'm accepting. The poison tea from Mrs. Liu. It's the best theory of all.
That she's they're all on a mushroom trip. Yeah.
I have actually solved that. I just have to make the video for it. No, yeah, but solve that. It's not.
Oh, right. Solution videos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you do those? Yeah.
So, Lizzie, why don't you do the first one?
All right. Let's see. I've got to get close so I can actually read. I don't know why I can't see today. As far as theories, this is from Emily C.
Oh, yeah.
As far as theories, there were two. One, this is all an experiment where everyone is studied to see how far they can be pushed. And two, there are moles to make Frumville to keep this experiment on track.
I still like the Chromanocle, but what do you think about the whole mole theory, guys?
I to me it feels like the mole theory comes from viewers being far too exposed, maybe, to stories where there are moles. Let's put it this way. If instead of a show, we were watching a baseball game and it was two teams playing against each other and someone in the crowd stood up and said, I think there's a mole on one of the other teams playing for the opposite team, and they're actively trying to make their team lose. That's why this happened and that happened and this happened and that happened. You'd think that that person was out to lunch, right? Because we have no experience of moles in professional sports or games. Like, there'd be no context whatsoever for that as a theory of why the New York Yankees are beating the Boston Red Sox.
Don't ever say that.
That was the greatest example ever. And Bob, you are more than welcome to come back anytime. No, we could talk about the lunch.
Yankees suck.
Yeah. Anyway,
but you see what I'm saying, right? Like you wouldn't think anything of it, right? Like even though you have conflict, you have two sides against each other, you have this sort of thing. So like I personally, and maybe this is my bias, but I've seen absolutely nothing up to this point to suggest to me intuitively or otherwise, if I were to look more closely, that there is anyone here for whom the stakes of life or death are not real. It really does seem like the stakes of life or death are truly real for everyone. And I can't, and it's not just an evidence thing. It's also from a storytelling thing. Like what is the narrative import of having any of these characters be playing for the bad guys? Like if you name me a single character and try to tell me that they're a mole, and you will immediately destroy that character's narrative. It will not make any sense.
The only thing I don't think so.
I think Donna.
Reaching, Liz. No, it's not. I've heard the Donna theory. I've heard the Donna's a mole theory. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. That character is so earnest. It's played. But she plays it so straightforward.
She totally is. Yeah. I feel like she is being compromised in some way. I don't think that she willingly showed up playing for the company. I don't think that that's the case at all. And part of the reason why I think that Donna is because of the way she responded to Jim when he said, "Someone hurt us." You heard it. Someone hurt us. And the way she responded to him was as if she knew something more than what we think that she knows.
The
odds of that are so incredibly low, and I'll tell you why. And it's a very boring and practical reason, right?
Is this the Ernie Bob speaking?
What's that? No, I mean, yeah, no, right. No, it's like it has more to do with what, like, so if that were true, then it means that Liz Saunders, the actor, has to know and was directed to deliver that line, which is probably one of many takes, deliver that line that way with the right amount of nuance that a viewer is going to pick up on it. You do know that she's not the character is not an actual person. Like she's an actor who's playing the role and who has read the script up to the end of season two, who, if Donna is a mole, Liz Saunders certainly doesn't know that she's a mole yet. Cause she hasn't, she would only have read the scripts up to the end of season
two.
Let me finish.
Okay.
Which means somebody has pulled her aside and said the following to her. They have said, "You're a mole. And we need you to deliver your lines without anything in the plot or the episodes or the lines to suggest this one way or the other. We need you to deliver those lines with the right amount of nuance so that when it turns out that you are a mole, we'll be able to look back and they'll be able to see and go, aha." That is like the depth of that sort of exercise is, I'm telling you, it's just not there.
Wait, let me first say this. I do not think there's a mole.
No,
there's two things about Liz Saunders' character that I don't particularly care. She keeps her hands in her pocket, which I know maybe that's just what she does in real life. Like that's her thing.
Or that's Donna's thing.
But that's Donna's thing. But to rebut what you're going to say, Bob, they did it in one of the greatest reveals ever, Harry Potter. With Snape.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's either. I don't think she's a mole. I think the whole mole theory is just grabbing for straws. I think Randall is bar none, without a doubt, batshit crazy because he's in this world and whatever else. I think Donna knows a lot of things. I think the way they shot it made it as though she was just at the right place at the right time.
All right, I'm going into the notes. I was not going to go in here.
But anyway.
But I don't know, like with Snape, I mean, Snape's an interesting example though, Alex, because we don't have to go too deep into this.
No.
But like, this is what I meant when I said there is no narrative. I cannot see the narrative benefit or the narrative import of there being a mole. Nothing to say about it. I mean, Snape wasn't a mole. First of all, he just had conflicting allegiances, and he had narratively it works so elegantly and beautifully for his character, and it's a huge bit of misdirection. With Donna, that wouldn't be misdirection. It would really be reaching. Like, it would be random. It would be unsolvable and random. If you've got to resort to the nuances in the way she delivers lines, or the fact that she's got her hands in her pockets to deduce that she's a mole, I feel like you're looking for something that it really isn't there. Like, that's my, I think those things are just choices. I don't think they're informed by like a mystery. To me, that's right up there with zoning in on little pieces of randomly placed set decoration.
We've never done that before at all.
Right. Or the things that background actors do that put them slightly out of sync or out of continuity in different takes and stuff. All these different little things. It's fun. Again, I wouldn't dissuade someone from doing it. It's a fun bit of business. But to me, that's not evidence. To me, those are like really spurious, almost unhinged little red herrings that don't actually, to me, the answer is going to be in the narrative. The answer is going to be in the story. The answer is going to be in what the, and Snape's turn near the end of Harry Potter is embedded intrinsically within the story, because it's already a story about allegiances, about jockeying for power, about, you know, having the strength to overcome what is in front of you versus what you know is right, being on the side of right instead of on the side of might. It has all of those things built into it, right? I would venture a guess to say that he's not even 100% clear through the whole story where he's going to land in the end, because he's in self-preservation and trying to be the best version of himself he can be. That's not being a mole. That's trying to figure out who you are. Totally consistent with the thrust of that narrative. Whereas this, like, I'm just not seeing any of that. Maybe we don't know enough yet, and I'm willing to go there, but
all I have to say is take that with your little
I'm sticking with it.
All right, give me your evidence, counselor.
It's the beginning of this. I didn't start thinking about it until season two, and it's just the beginning of these thoughts. I'm not saying like if
no, I know, I know. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
I was thinking it was her and Randall, and I still kind of think Randall, he's a little unhinged.
I think Randall is there, you know, and again, this is just me kind of watching the show. I think Randall is there to illustrate how a certain type of person in the world that we have not really seen much of in the show will behave and react when he gets there. What is a kind of right of center leaning natural conspiracy theorist, distrustful of authority? What is that kind of person going to do? What are they going to add to the soup when they show up in a place like this? To me, that's an interesting little bit thing that someone's going to add to a story that's going to drive some tension, it's going to drive some conflict, and it's going to force some other characters into situations that we haven't seen yet, and hopefully move the plot along.
I think it was more of a fan thing than it was an actual...
Sure.
I think it was all created by the fans. I don't know. I mean, I'm not 100% sure.
Honestly, I started thinking about it on my own. It was just organic. It wasn't fan driven. And then all of a sudden I'm seeing other people post about it. And I don't go deep into posts. I can't help but see them and I read them. But given some particularly negative and nasty stuff, which one site in particular just evolved into, I really step back from that because I am not about that kind of being, you know, like we're all here loving the show. Well, let's all love it.
We're not about that, but okay. My question about the whole mole theory is this, and please, the people that are listening, either on the podcast or tonight.
Yeah. Give us your,
take the whole mole thing aside. Okay. It is a mole. It's a whole experiment. How do you explain the friggin' monsters? Because when we had you on for your first interview, Bob, I think the words that you said to us were, I shit my pants almost when that monster came through the door and almost scared the crap out of me. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm just saying, scary. You can't like if they're going to make a jump and say that they created that too, then that's a whole separate thing. But I just can't see that happening. That I think there's just other forces that are going on. Now, the mole thing could be part of it. Yeah. But at the same time, I just think they're all just trying to survive. And maybe,
yeah, I mean, of course.
My question about the mole, and again, we don't even spend a lot of time on it, but like my question would be, if what do you need the mole for?
To instigate, to control, possibly report back certain things, to influence certain things happening. You know, like if it is an experiment and they're looking for some kind of reaction or result, that this person would go in and encourage that to happen or set it up to happen. I don't know, like whatever they would want a mole for.
Well, okay. Yeah. So that's whatever they would want a mole for is a easy answer, you know, not to be critical, but I guess like everything you said up to that point, to go in there, to instigate, to monitor, to report back, think about everything, think about the world that they're living in. So the people in charge, if there is someone in charge, if this isn't just magic, if it isn't like sort of extra dimensional magic, you know, sort of time space cul-de-sac or whatever you want to call it. And again, I don't know what it is. You're basically saying that, okay, you've got a world where when they go into it, they can't come out of it. They're locked in. There are monsters that come out at night. There's magical stuff that happens. There's weird trees. They can clearly kind of track them and monitor them, and they know what's going on. They're communicating with them through various means. They're communicating with them telepathically. Someone is communicating to Sarah, to Boyd, when he gets the worms under his arms. You got all this crazy shit happening, right? All this weird, wild, crazy, magical shit happening. Again, what do you need a mole for? A mole almost feels like a really quaint, unnecessary, if it is an experiment and they're watching them and they've got all this nutty shit going on and there's all kinds of magic and stuff going on, what do you need a spy for? Like, what are you, like, you sending like Encyclopedia Brown in there to take notes? Like, what why? What is the import?
Like, it would be important to have someone in there as like, I mean, it doesn't make sense that she's just as scared as everybody else. She's not.
Play it through. Like, play the scenario through. Let's imagine Donna goes back to whoever it is she goes back to, and okay, she reports. What is she telling them? She's like, they're starting to suspect stuff. Yeah, no shit. she's like, right? She's.
Uh-oh. Oh no, Bob froze.
He froze. No. He froze. He's probably still talking.
No, I'm back.
He's back. He had to have a drink.
I can see it when I freeze. But anyway, you see what I'm saying, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you can't stop at theory. You have to take that theory and then you have to apply it in a meaningful, practical way and say, how is that playing out? Like, that has to be part of the analysis, right?
Hey, Bob.
I think Donna's a mole because of what she does with her hands and the way she said certain things. But wait a minute, like, you have to kind of go, what is it that she's, what's the role that she's playing? What's the practical purpose? I don't see it. Like, if there's a mole, it renders a whole bunch of other stuff.
I think the mole decided to like cut your little thing off and you were messing with the mole too much. And he cut your.
Although I will say, so here's something though, Liz, that I do like, and I've been thinking about this a lot. So, okay. A friend and I had occasion to play a game last year and the bit of the year before. We got super into it, and it's called Don't Starve. And there may be some fans or viewers who play games that are familiar with Don't Starve, but I'm not saying that there are a bunch of elements of this show that are similar to that, but the fact that there are so many elements of the show that are similar-ish to a crafting, surviving, kind of metaphysical, kind of magical, kind of monsterish game where you have to work together and cooperate and get food, and you have to take shelter at nighttime because monsters come out of the darkness and try to put out your fire and kill you. And your sanity meter is affected, your health meter, all these sort of things. I won't get into the details of it because it's kind of geeky, but the show has reminded me more of that than anything else that I've seen. To me, the theory that maybe they're involved in some kind of game. There might be some foundation to that. I can't really go any further than that because I agree. I still think we're in the beginnings ish of the story. We haven't been given enough meat to chew on yet, but absolutely. I'm seeing things that made me go, oh, if this is a real life version of a bunch of players being dropped into a game and being expected to play and survive, which we wouldn't question if we just turned on a video game and started playing.
Right.
You wouldn't see it as a horror scenario, but if it was happening in real life, it absolutely would be a horror scenario. And this business that you're locked in it, there's elements of that I'm seeing in some of the theories that I'm like, yeah, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing pieces of that. I'm buying that. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, Liz, you wanted to go.
I was just going to say, so in this Don't Starve game, there's no kind of ref or anything like that, any kind of moderator. You're just players.
That's the thing. No overlord. This is the thing. This takes me back to the mole, and then we'll move on from it. You don't need a mole when there's no overlord.
Okay.
There is no bad guy watching over the game, monitoring things. There's just players, and the game has been created and set for them, and off they go. And new players show up sometimes, as you see in online massive world kind of games and stuff, and people die and they're gone from the game. Like maybe it is like a real world version of something like that. And the consequences, like maybe my character and my character's wife and his daughter are out there like alive somewhere. Like maybe that is what happens when you die in the game. You're back to your old life or something. We don't know yet. Again, we haven't been given enough information. They'd just be wild random theories at this point. We really don't know. But there are a number of things like landmarks, and go in the game Don't Starve, you can go through these portals and pop up in different places in the world that you open up, but it has limits. You can't get out of it. You can't get out of it. You're stuck inside of it. There's so many pieces that I think, okay, yeah, that's a close comparator. I hope it's more interesting than that, frankly.
Right.
Yeah. I hope it's wackier and more surprising. Now, I want to be surprised by a story. I don't want to solve it. I want to be surprised by it.
I feel the exact same way. Like, I don't want to know everything, which is one reason why I don't spend a lot of time with the theories that people come up with. You know, I might just read one and it is in one eye, out the other. I just had a thought. I wanted to say something, but you know, this was what it was. What if all of these people signed some kind of permission saying that without realizing what they were signing?
Right.
Without realizing
like a waiver.
What they were saying, they signed a waiver saying that they could die. Or whatever, like you bought a car and, you know, little fine print, this car could cause death or whatever, you know, and they signed it somehow, like maybe not even something that's in common, like going into the hospital, the same hospital, having the same procedure or whatever. Like it's not anything in common that they have with each other other than they signed this waiver saying that they knew they possibly could be killed, and that was that. I don't know. Right. I just thought of that while you were talking.
One person said, this is the MGM version of Squid Game, if that's what you're trying to get at.
Or that the game, imagine how differently you would play a video game if you while you were playing it,
right,
you thought you could actually die.
Forget it. You wouldn't take any chances.
Yeah. You'd actually play. You'd be playing for real. You wouldn't be playing a game. You'd be playing for real. Whereas, so maybe it's not that they signed something saying that they wouldn't know that they could actually die. Maybe they can't actually die, but they actually believe that they could while they're playing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be interesting. That's interesting to me.
Speaking of dying, we did have another question, and I'm really sad because one of the king of conspiracy theories is one of our listeners, the Chromanacle, And this person, I think, daily has a new theory.
Yeah.
I mean, this out there, from the dates to the broken glass, which I do want to talk about because it's interesting. But
yeah, I'm not familiar with the Cro-Magnon. Again, I go in and peek every now and again just to see some of the funny things.
But Johnny Utah from the beach, you got to love that picture of of Michael. Tabitha being in the real world. First off, do you think Tabitha is in the real world? Both of you.
Go ahead, Liz. I'm curious what you think.
I don't think so, because when she looked out the window, the landscape looked like a postcard. It didn't look real. She might have been in the medical tent for all we know for the game.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting. So this is just me personally. And again, I may be wrong. It could be that the makers of the show are designing every frame and every set and everything every character does with a view to adding to the complex labyrinthian mystery that is, where are we and what are we doing? Having been involved in a number of shows, including this one, I have a feeling that that's not how it is.
What, that she's back in the real world? Oh, no!
Oh, it's okay. I'm back. It's okay.
He's back.
It only happens for a second. It's just to get me to slow down. I don't think the answer lies in the what's in the window. I don't think the answer lies in what you can see when you freeze frame on the screen.
It looks like a different
person, but it's like, to me, that's just like, look, it's just post-production. It's just trying to make the thing look real. It's the scene. Yeah. The answer lies in the scene. What is it that happens in the scene, in the story, in the plot? The answer is in the narrative. And I don't think we've been given anything.
Right.
We have not been given anything. Right. Like, the answer is that she's either in the real world or she's not. If she's in the real world, the story takes a fundamental turn. It takes a fundamental turn. This happened at the end of season two of Lost. At the end of season two of Lost, in the final episode, and my apologies to anyone who hasn't seen that show, you've no excuse at this point. In the final scene of the second season of Lost, there is a reveal of a character, and it's the first time you see a character who is not on the island, but experiences something contemporaneous to something that has happened on the island. It's not a flashback to the characters' lives before they got to the island. It's in real time. And that was the first time that you saw that there was an outside world existing at the same time as the island. That's a key fundamental shift that immediately laid waste to a whole bunch of fan theories that they were dead, that they were, like, it immediately kind of shut so many things down, because it's like, oh, they are somewhere in the world and somebody somewhere else in the world experiences something because of what happened on the island. It's an immediate reveal that closes off a bunch of doors. Well, I don't think this scene with Tabitha, based on what we've seen already, does any of that work.
I really don't think we know. Thank you for crushing my Lost dreams, and I'm not going to lie and see it. If I haven't seen it by now, I'm not going to.
That's right.
It's okay. Right. But my point being is, anybody have potato vodka? Yes, that's a good one. They changed the still. I hear the new guy doing the still is a lot. I go to read
directly for the old stuff.
I'm telling you,
he's got a bunch of bottles of it under his bed, and I just go straight to him. We drank a bunch of it while we were doing King of Pond. I don't know if you saw this. There was somebody in the fan group, and I think I saw it, and I sent him a screenshot of it. There's like a youth pastor for the church that we were shooting King of Pond in the basement of. And he caught wind that we were there, and he posted something saying, "Hey, Tom and Frank are currently in the basement of the church that I work at shooting a show." And Reed and I were kind of like, "Oh, gee, are we going to have a bunch of people show up?" You know, they did. We're just minor side characters. Nobody's showing up to see us.
I would have showed up.
Yeah.
Oh, my
I'm waiting for my, We're waiting for our guest pass to be on the show. That's what we want. I fly up. I got a couple of days. I don't have to work for rate. I can work for Vodka.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of that. We got lots of that.
No, but there was a theory, and again, there was one that was a time travel theory, which I don't really want to get into because they really didn't talk about those dates in the first. They talked about a bunch of dates in the first season, and they really haven't gone back to that yet.
They mentioned it. It was mentioned. Mm. Those dates were mentioned this season, though.
But it wasn't like it was a big.
It wasn't a big thing, but like they were mentioned.
But the glass theory is kind of interesting, and I'm going to explain why. So
yeah, I'm not familiar with that. Tell me.
Okay, so Sarah breaks glass at the diner, cleans it up. There was like three incidences of like glass, and then the last incident was when Jade was trying to fit those two. Remember when he was talking to Reed, actually, Tom, the bartender, when he was trying to do an experiment, and. Yeah. Basically, the whole theory is what Jade said was trying to figure out how these pieces of glass come together. Now, rewind to when Nathan is talking to Sarah. They have a conversation. And the only reason I remember this is because I went back and I'm doing a little bit of my own rewatch. And she's like, she actually talks about this theory of trying to put the pieces back together. Now, I don't know how that all fits, but it does make it kind of like maybe it's something to think about in season three when we get there. Now, my question for you guys is this, because I don't know, and also the listeners and the people listening on the podcast. Do you think Sarah's role is finished, or does she have more secrets to provide? Saying this, she's not a mole, but she could have a connection to the bigger entity somehow.
She does, though.
I'm saying.
I think, I wondered if once she didn't actively have the worms, like it was out in the open, that she would not be of any use. But then when they go looking for the music box, she can hear it. No one else can hear it, but she can hear it. And she tells Boyd what he has to do.
Right.
So she's still connected somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
I agree with that. I think, the so much of this is like narratively driven for me, right? Like I think picking up on stuff like that is very much on the money. Like to me, that kind of stuff, like, okay, a couple of characters had a conversation, then you have a character go through this sort of like journey where they go from, like, think about what Sarah has gone through up to this point, right? There's no way she's done because her arc isn't finished. She goes from being an instrument of this place, whatever that means. And I don't think it has to be purposive. I think it could very well be just like, here's what this place does to some people, of a certain type. And Victor, I think maybe is another example of a character who's there's some connections. There's like a tether between him and the place themselves.
How did he survive?
All these different things. So like, I feel like, I mean, have we seen Sarah and Victor together at any point?
I don't.
Have they had a conversation?
That's so interesting.
Like, there have been a number of characters that I don't think they've shared any narrative time together.
Right.
Like, they have not moved the plot together. And it would be interesting to see. And this maybe is where the glass comes into it, right? Is that maybe the puzzle that needs to be put together is all the different people who have been affected by this place all coming together and sharing their thoughts. And we got a teaser of that at the tail end of this season when you have these characters coming together, sharing their experiences.
Finally.
And then all you needed to have was one person in the room that goes, oh yeah, I've heard of that before. I'm familiar with that. Here's what that is. And then suddenly you have a lowercase s solution to something and somebody figures it out and they figure out what to do. I feel like there's a larger version of that that is yet to happen, where characters like Victor and Sarah and, you know, people like that come together and go, let's share, let's compare notes and let's talk about what's going on here. Maybe that's the answer to us getting out of here. And that would be a very elegant theme or, you know, sort of thesis of the show, which is to say that here we are all trapped in this mess together. We're all at odds with each other. We can be quite disparate in the way we go about our business. We can be isolated from each other. We're very affected by our traumas and by our grief and by our pain. But guess what? We all have a piece of a larger mosaic that if we come together and we share it with each other, we will be able to come up with a solution, whatever that is, whatever that means, right? And in this show, the solution is the metaphor of them being able to get out of this drain, right? This eddy in the middle of a lake. That's what it is to me. Okay. To me, that's narratively elegant and makes sense from a story perspective. To me, that's so much more satisfying than an escape room that you find the key and you put it right over here and you get the bottle and you get the, yeah, that's cool. Great. Good for you. You made it out of the room. But like, it doesn't tell a story that moves me in a meaningful way, which is why I don't take a lot of umbrage with people necessarily who speak up and say, I'm not buying the characters. I'm not buying the writing. I'm not buying the, I may not agree with them, but if that's the issue I'm taking with the show, that's fair game. To me, that's fair game. If somebody's not moved by what's happening, if someone's not, I would say, well, wait till it's over and then we'll have a conversation about whether you were.
To that point, you know, a lot of people, you know, when we grew up, we had 20 episode shows.
Exactly. More. Yeah.
And people are saying that, well, with only 10 episodes, everyone should be jam packed. Well, you know what? You also have to set tables. You have to set the table for the good stuff. And, you know, we've watched The Walking Dead. I mean, we've watched every episode of The Walking Dead. And I think that, you know, every episode wasn't the greatest episode. There were some stinkers in there. And I don't think there was a stinker in here. I'm just saying, but you got to move the plot. And some of it isn't exactly the way we want it to be moved, but you gotta move the plot. And I think that with an ensemble cast like this, we got so many moving parts. It's not always going to be great.
I get the not every episode is going to be, you know, mind-blowing and exciting, but I don't think that there is any screen time wasted. I feel like, to your point, you know, they set the table and you just have to make note of what they're trying to say there. You know, I'll continue to go back to what I thought was a throwaway scene of Tabitha seeing Marielle in the cabinet. And, you know, you didn't know what that meant until the week after, but they are imparting information with every scene, whether you pick up on it or not. There's information there all the time.
Absolutely.
So the only issue I would take with that, I guess.
And this intermission is
brought to you by Canada, very far away from where we are. The only issue I guess I would take with that to a certain extent, Liz, is that just as we don't know if it's not working because we haven't seen the whole story yet, we also don't know if it's working.
Right.
We don't know either way. Like to me, some of the criticism, some of the praise falls as flat as the criticisms in that sense, where when someone is saying, no, guys, they're going somewhere. No, this all means something. No, this is all coming together. Anyone who's saying that is saying it on faith.
Yeah, oh, I'm totally full
of it. It's just faith. Like you're a writer, Liz, you've written stories, you've written books, right? Like, have you written novels? Have you written full length novels? I know you've done anthologies.
Right behind her shoulder are a couple of volumes of them.
Yeah. Have you done
book five?
Okay. But have you done do your books have multiple chapters of the same story? I'm just trying to track if they're just anthologies of short stories. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a continuous story.
Yeah, surely someone reading one chapter
mm-hmm.
of your book and you asking them, what do you think of my story? What do you think? Like they're, the answers they can give you, both positive and negative,
yeah.
have a whole big world of blind spot around them. They don't know what it means. They don't know where it's going. They don't know whether it leads to something, whether it doesn't lead to something. They might have faith. They might be doubtful. They might be critical of things that you go, oh.
I think we should freeze frame all of his emotions. It's better than
he's ever. Had all the emotions so
yeah,
far.
That's right. Like, whenever I get good. But yeah, but you do know what I mean though, Liz, right?
Yeah, like no, it's, it, I like, totally to me, know what you
yeah.
mean.
Yeah.
The thing is I think the question that comes after that is, are you still on the ride? Or are you getting off?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's the important question. Like I have faith. I really do have faith that they are not going to lead me astray. Like they're not going to leave me hanging out in the middle of the ocean on a raft with no way to get back in.
Yep.
I really have faith that this time it's going to happen.
Yeah. But I at the same time, I do too, but at the same time, I'm very mindful. And again, I'm sort of agnostic about it, frankly, but with any given audience, with every given story, it is my understanding that the story needs to do the work. And that if you stay with it, it is an act of faith. And if you don't stay with it, it is because it has stopped moving you. It's because it has stopped getting you to a place where you're even interested anymore. And no matter how great a story is, any story can lose somebody. Absolutely. I don't know if you've ever stopped reading a book or if you've ever read a couple of chapters.
Have you watched The Walking Dead, The Negan Years?
I gave up. I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm
there done. You go. And a lot of people did. A lot of audience dropped off at that point, me included. And it's like, okay, this story went to a place that got me somewhere emotionally. And now I feel like there's nothing really left for me.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Like I got a text while we're doing this asking if I'm watching Dead City.
Right. Right.
And I was like, they made all this headway at the end of season 11, Maggie and Negan. And then they go back as if they never had that conversation.
I love the show, but that's all another conversation. Yeah.
But you love things about it that I will never love.
Exactly. I do want to ask you and the viewers, and it's not really a theory, but what was the purpose of killing Smiley off when they made such a big deal about promoting the crap out of this guy? And do you think he'll be back?
I mean, I have this sort of cynical, hey, this is a show that they want people to watch kind of answer. And visually, he's striking.
He's
set apart, right? But let me be, I'm going to say something that I am sure a whole bunch of viewers and fans of the show are not going to like. I'm sure they're not going to like it. He is not a character.
Yeah.
He is not a character. And I know he's a character in the way that the aliens in the Aliens movies, like the Ripley and Ridley Scott and James Cameron movies, how those are aliens, how those are characters. They're not characters. They're something that exists for the purpose of testing the characters and pushing their boundaries and seeing what they will do and making something very compelling in a scary sort of way for the audience. They're not meant to be characters.
But I mean, it's like the Terminator is a character, but Smiley just isn't.
They eventually made him a character, but in the first Terminator movie, I would say he wasn't a character.
Really?
Not really. Like, I mean, I don't know. We can have debates and disagreements over what it means to be a character. I'm all there for that. But I guess I'm thinking from the purpose of like, what is the story you're trying to tell and who is it you're telling a story about? Right.
Yeah.
If it comes to pass that part of this story is about the monsters, that there's a whole backstory and a whole interesting, but again, I'm 100% there for that. I think that will be cool. Yeah. And I think there's some interesting things, hopefully, to be revealed about what these creatures are and where they came from. If the show doesn't tell us that, I'll be deeply disappointed. I hope we do learn something about these things and where they came from. I really, really do. But again, up to this point, there's been sparingly little revealed to the audience about what the intentions or the desires of these things are, other than to be menacing and to hunt. Well, that's pretty much what they do. And yeah, I agree with you though. You get these little twists like, oh, look at what they did to, you know, again, Phoebe Rex's character. Like they clearly have a playful sort of element about them. Okay. Add that to the list of things we know about these creatures.
Right.
That still just makes them creatures. Like it still just makes them, there are animals who, there are predatory animals who play, like who mess or like cats play with mice.
Oh my gosh,
like, they're not, that doesn't make them characters. It's just an element of their predatory nature.
But Bob, to your point, first off, I do want to mention this comment, you know, Betrayed King, we don't like Smiley. He's responsible for Donna's death. But even within that monster theory that you're saying, you know, I can't think of like perfect examples of it, but there's always that gray back or there's that spotted, whatever, that extra spotted wolf. Yes, they're monsters. I think when they put you on the poster and they put you out front the way he did, I mean, I hope he can come back just because he seemed like he was kind of the head of the monsters. And I know maybe I'm a little bit more, I'm drinking the Smiley juice more than others, but you know, I just think it was a bad move.
You're experiencing the story, and not just the story, but the experience of the show. You're experiencing the show, not in the order that the show was assembled. So the show was made last summer. So they did not kill Smiley after putting him on the poster. They created a season of the show. They wrote it and they mapped it out. And then they came up with a shooting schedule and they filmed it. And then after it was done, they started assembling marketing material for the show to market it and to get people to watch it. And Smiley, who was, you know, again, that's something that fans of Kai,
I think we were the ones that coined it.
Yeah. Like we you know, that gets assembled and there's a decision made, you know, let's put it this way. I'm not 100% convinced or sure that when I was filming my stuff in season one and they were doing all that stuff with me in the box, that the plan was to have the very first trailer of the show be me in the box. You know, maybe it was.
Yeah,
but that's how it played out. Like, I don't think you always know. I think sometimes you do, but I don't think you always know necessarily how you're going to be presenting a creative piece of work that you've made from a marketing perspective until after you've made it, until after you've put it together and you go, oh, this is pretty arresting. This will be cool. Again, I'm open to being wrong, but then maybe they knew all along that they were going to do it this way. But you know,
you're making a really good point, and I hate the fact that you're making such a legitimately awesome,
I'm ruining well the fun. Thought.
You, but I hate it. You fun. Are ruining my I fun.
I know. No, I'm very sorry.
I will say though, I mean, even cutting it the way they did, like editing it, I mean, they made him a focal point this year.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And I just think it's a shame because I think he could have been a really good adversary. They obviously, and I know Lizzie and I have talked about it, they put a ton more money into the show this year. I mean, it's clear that they put more
money. Well, as far as marketing it, they did.
And also there was more monsters. There was a lot of stuff. Effects.
You know, one of the interesting things, and I wanted to ask the both of you what you thought, like when Victor and Tabitha are down in the caves and they come upon these monsters, they're not just coming upon these sleeping monsters, they're coming upon all these objects. And it made me start to think about why those things. What do those things have to do with, you know, the monsters that are sleeping, you know, like the dummy, the chest, the television, the toys, all of that stuff. Like even the bride's suitcase was there.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's clear. I mean, it's clearly giving information. I mean, I've seen a number of things I feel like on the show that for me reinforces that there is no plan to that. Like, and by plan, I mean, like, I feel like a lot of the theories fall down because they presuppose that there's a puppet master.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Even the mole thing, right?
Yeah.
The who's the mole? Is there a mole? Who could the mole be? Why the mole? All of that is predicated on a foundation, on an assumption that there's someone to report back to, that there is someone on the other side of an invisible wall who's playing, who's doing something, right? To me, I've seen more evidence on the show than I can feel like I can shake a stick at, that they're stuck in the middle of something. Like, not unlike, I mean, if you get lost in the woods, and there are bears and there's mosquitoes and you can't find
spiders. Any
food and you can't, there's spiders and there's stuff you can break your ankle on and all kinds of shit like that. You don't need someone hiding behind the trees, watching you, actively trying to make sure that you don't get out of the woods. You don't need it. You already have all of the elements you need existing in the natural world. In this case, a very unnatural world, but hey, there's lots of natural stuff that happens that seems otherworldly. Like, to me, I have not seen anything that necessarily says to me that there is something like that, with one exception, like with one single exception, and that's the voice on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only, to me, that's the only thing that sits as a, like, a weird kind of outlier where I'm like, who was that was talking to them? Like, what is that all about?
One of the things that we're talking to Bob Mann, who, and we're trying to recap season one, season two, and possibly season three. Now, we already know what happens. Just kidding. I did want to, I'm looking at the chat, and before, because I want to talk a little bit about Victor, because people are going crazy about that. But before we do that, Lizzie, what was your thought of the whole Akui kids? And where do you think that they all kind of fit in your mind? Because that was some of the worst closed captioning. I think people are going ballistic for like 2 weeks.
Is that really the spelling? You know, or
what is the whole deal with these kids? I mean,
I really don't know. Like, I really, really don't know, because Jade has now seen them. First, Tabitha saw them. Jade has now seen them. And I'm pretty sure Victor saw them in the cave too, like when they were poking out between those.
I'm not sure if he did or not, but it's here nor there. I mean,
they got
jails. They got beds of rock beds. And
I don't know. Like, I really don't know. Like, they look like ghosts in a sense because of their coloring. And what we think about ghosts a lot of times. But I don't know. I couldn't really get anywhere with that.
It's pretty left field. Like, it really does. Although, again, the way for me that makes it fit, like,
are you going to say that they're moles?
Yeah, that's right. I think the kids are the moles.
Yes.
Those kids. When Jade stumbles upon them, they are pretending to sleep. Not unlike a kid pretending to sleep on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
When they know they're trying to stay up to see Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I feel like when you've got all these elements, like if you play one of these RPG games, you know, in these kind of survival games, like Don't Starve, there is a, you know, if there's a.
He's starving.
Yes.
A little bit of a pause for
he's drinking over there, so I'm gonna drink.
It's so fun because you guys see this freezes before I do. I'll see you react. You should almost have like a escape like a word that you say. As soon as I freeze, just say it and I'll stop.
Ankui.
Let it be Ankui. But what I was gonna say was I feel, you know, when I see those things, it's like they may not be connected, like there may just be a rogues list of things that exist in this world.
Yeah.
And it's and as characters encounter them, they get different pieces of the puzzle. You know, the puzzle to be solved is how do we get out of this out of this game. You know, again, I hope I'm wrong, but it does seem like that kind of thing. Even the reveal of Jade looking up and yeah. you realize that the symbol are the roots superimposed against the sky. That was cool. Yeah, and to me that was very reminiscent of the kind of thing that you would discover at a certain point in a game. You know, you yeah. see these references and then you discover, or like in Lost, the numbers, you know, like they have, yeah. you know, it's almost similar to that, where something that it takes on a significance for certain characters does get revealed to be okay. something, but it might not be as big of a connection that ties everything in as you thought it was going to be. It's just
One of the lists, or what Lisa said in the chat, and she's right. Somebody said that it might be a different language. It might be translatable. There's a whole bunch of different things, and it might not be the right way we're saying it. And of course,
you mean spelled. It's not spelled.
Right.
We don't know how it's really supposed to be spelled.
Has everyone seen
Ankui?
Ankui. It means come back.
Okay, good. Did you hear my question? Did it freeze before my question?
Yeah,
have you both seen Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, of course, of course.
Oh, you've seen all of Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
What could be the equivalent? I do this with my kids. I ask them questions about stories and see if they get it. It's very condescending and annoying. Yeah, and
winter
I admit
is coming.
That right. Hodor.
Oh yeah.
Hodor.
Hold the door. Yeah.
Hodor.
Right.
Which, like, incidentally,
his name wasn't even a mystery, but what a cool reveal when you found out where his name came from. Yeah. Right. Like it could be something like that, where the thing you're hearing isn't actually the thing. Like it's something else that is not something that we could, like, what were the clues that told you that Hodor's name was Hold the Door? What were the clues? I'm going to suggest zero. There were zero clues. There were zero things revealed.
Yeah, you didn't know until
you could not have solved. It was just a rewarding reveal when you go, oh, cool. That's it. There it is.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, cool moment. It's not something that can be solved. Yeah,
my heart just broke for him.
Storytelling. It's the magic of storytelling. Yeah. That's all it is. I'm hoping that it will be something really cool that nobody can possibly solve. That it's just going to be a neat kind of reveal about something. Again, I'm hoping all of these theories are wrong. I'm hoping that it's something so much cooler that they've got cooked up here that we can't possibly think of it.
All right, another character that I do want to kind of point out, because Lizzie had her pulse on her in the beginning. Do you think Tilly is more than just a little old nosy lady, or do you think she's more to the story? Because I just think I know so many Tillys in my life. It's everybody's like going crazy about her. Oh, she thinks she figured out that Fatima was pregnant. A woman knows, and all this other stuff. And then she brings up also the whole 47 theory, where she had four kids, seven grandkids, and 47 was on the radio. So there's a bunch of there's those two theories between Tilly and 47. What are you guys' thoughts about Tilly first off?
I mean, she acts like a busybody.
She is.
And that bugs me. But she's like a door opener. A lot of times she comes up and gives you a piece of information, and it's a very short exchange, and then she's on her way. Mm. Like, she seems very busybody, you know, like so-and-so is here, this one's doing that, blah, blah, blah. The whole thing with Fatima, I was like, I'm a woman, I don't know. I mean, I know if someone's like, oh, well, I'm late. Well, you know, you could be pregnant, but looking at someone, you can't just look at someone and know automatically that they're pregnant. Like, she doesn't know Fatima.
Well, that's so in my world, what I would say is that's inductive reasoning, not deductive reasoning. Yeah. So that's, instead of saying, what is my evidence? What is my evidence that this woman can't can't look at a young woman and go, I've seen these signs before, I believe you're pregnant. What is the evidence that we've been provided that she can actually do that? I would suggest none.
Yeah.
There's no evidence whatsoever. The character says it and she's right.
Yeah.
She's right. Yeah. And there it is. But to me, it doesn't follow that inductive reasoning gets you to the opposite conclusion where it's like, a person can't do that. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Maybe this character can.
Hey, yeah. It's from land. It. We don't know.
And that's it. That's all there is to it. Like to me, there's nothing to be dissected there. Unless something very clear is presented to me, I take everything that every character says, which is their delivery of the words on the scripts that they've been given. Every single thing that every character says is true to them.
Yeah.
I believe it. I believe it 100%. Yeah. There is no reason for me not to believe it. If I'm distrustful of every single character and suspicious of every character, I'm probably not experiencing the story the way it's intended to be experienced. I think she is an old lady who was on the bus and she's lived through a whole bunch of years and she knows she's close to the end. So she is she's kind of another example of the Randall thing.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a thought experiment. It's like, well, what would someone who's at the end of their life, who's terminally ill, who's nearing the end, who gets told this is your fate, here's where you are. How does a person like that take it? How do they behave? Do they thrash about? Do they kick and scream? Do they question everything? Maybe they don't. Maybe they just take it in stride and go, okay, if this is where I am, then I'm just going to be chill. And maybe the person who's chill is capable of relating to people and experiencing things and noticing things that other people can't. Again, that might be part of the bigger puzzle. Part of the bigger puzzle might be pulling people in who are just chilling the F out about the whole thing and saying, what have you noticed? What have you seen from your perspective? Are we listening to you? Are we giving you time and space to share with us your observations? Maybe we're not. Maybe we're just being dismissive. In a way, if I can get philosophical about it, maybe the audiences, these fans, maybe their reaction to these characters is a bit of a reflection of the challenges that the characters are experiencing themselves. Like, instead of taking all these characters at face value and saying, what is this experience and what would it be like to me if I was in the middle of it? What parts of my character would it bring out? Instead of like questioning all these characters as if they're all trying to fool us and fool each other, we're going to miss all those really cool, interesting tidbits that come out of the story. Like that to me, that's where story lives. That's where narrative lives. That's where an emotional journey lives. I actually buy her. I don't think she's suspect at all. I have not for a second thought that Tilly was suspect. I'm sorry, but I just don't.
Yeah.
I think that she's just a new ingredient to the soup. And she's going to have something to add and something to bring. And she did in this season. She did.
Yeah.
It's funny you should say that, because I forget where I read it, or I think it might have been Liz that told. No, I don't know if it was Liz Saunders that told us this. And I don't think it was. When she did that dance in the rain, that was all impromptu. That wasn't even part of the normal story. Because that's just the kind of lady that she is in general. Like her real. Have you ever worked with her? The actress?
No.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know, because you are the mayor of, you know, Halifax. Yeah,
and but I will say this though. Like if you there's nobody going around time is of such an incredible premium. Time is of such a valuable essence. When you're making these things, you got a crazy schedule. Like for someone to be walking around and going to all the different actors and sitting down, have a conversation, going to background actors, going to the set decorators, going to the production design and saying, okay, you got to make sure that this is over here and that's over there. And we're going to have all these Easter eggs and background actors. You got to make sure that you have this facial expression and that facial expression. You better go over here and go over there. No one's doing that. No one's doing that. On any of these kind of shows, they're trying to tell a very straightforward story. And the question is, what is happening in the scene itself between the actors? What is the beat? What's the story beat that's being communicated? What is the emotional experience of the actors? And And everybody involved kind of has to take their own place in it at face value. You have to believe that what you're doing is truly what you're doing.
So Bitly says, when Tilly calls Christy Quincy first day before she does an autopsy, sketchy. No, it actually isn't, for this reason. The first day she knew her girlfriend, Marilee, and she knew that whoever lived there was the doctor. And if you're a person of a certain age, you know who Quincy, Dr. Quincy is. And
I loved Quincy.
I just think you're like Lizzie, sometimes you're reaching for stuff that isn't there.
No, I get what Bob is saying. And the thing about it is that she might, I don't know, she might have ESP or something like that. She's psychic or something.
ESPN.
And sensed that Fatima was pregnant.
That's weird.
No, it's not weird. I mean, while Bob was talking, I'm like thinking about someone that I know that is pregnant now. And I told her that she was going to get pregnant. And it was before, you know, like they were trying and having no luck at all. And I was like, within a couple of months, this is happening. But the thing is, like, she just acts weird to me. You know, like she just shows up like a signpost. Kenny's over here. I just need to drop this off. I mean, yeah, she needed to drop the morphine off, but was there something more to her dropping the morphine off, knowing that Marielle was an addict? Like, did she already peg her on the bus? I mean, she didn't really have to drop it off. I don't know. It's just, to me, she's suspect. There's something off about her. And maybe she just has a higher sensitivity to this place and is plugged into this place. Maybe she's just plugged into the earth. I don't know.
Okay. So I need to get myself yelled at. I did forget Quincy wasn't a doctor. Well, he was a medical examiner. He was a doctor.
Right. But, yeah. Quincy.
But, and that's kind of, you're right. That is kind
no,
of,
no, he was a doctor. It was Dr. Quincy, but he was a medical examiner.
But that's then, but
sure. Yeah,
but
yeah, sure.
But the person's point was, then she ends up doing, Christy ends up doing an autopsy the next day. That is a coincidence.
I get it. Yeah.
No, I mean,
I think,
you're right.
I think it's a, you know, like there's a person of a certain generation that would, you know, if there was a defense lawyer in the town, there's a defense lawyer in the town, there's a character of a certain generation that would refer to that person as Matlock.
I was thinking the same thing.
Or Perry Mason.
But there's a person of another generation that wouldn't. It's a generationally relatable, appropriate reference for that character. It doesn't signify anything shifty. And again, I would say, like, there are probably all kinds of shifty behaviors, assuming that they're motivated and purposeful and directed by the actor, or that they're actually instructed to do it, which again, I have a hard time with, just practically speaking, I have a very hard time with that. I think a lot of it can be explained by the fact that this is a very unnatural, even from an acting perspective, like as an actor, you're told to do things that human beings would do in an unimaginable, unbelievable-ish type scenario, where part of the fun of it is going, how would people behave?
Yeah.
What would they do? How would they act? What would they? And again, I think if Tilly's doing anything out of the ordinary, Tilly's doing out of the ordinary things from the perspective of someone who's not yet situated in a place in their life where they've kind of given up on all of the hassles and the conflict and the, you know, like the tension, and that they're just like, this is my fate and I accept it. And if this is where I end up, this is where I end up. What am I going to spend there? And that probably, I would suggest that probably is what motivates a lot of behaviors and ways of speaking and ways of relating to other characters, and some of it is baked in the writing, that someone who doesn't quite get that, who hasn't seen that or experienced it or can't possibly relate to it yet, they're going to look at it and they're going to go, weird.
I'm cooey.
Oh boy. Yeah, we're going to try to get to everything tonight, folks. Okay. I know you're putting stuff in the chat. We may or may not get to everything, and trust me, we're going to have other people that are going to come on. It's just the problem with this awesome show is it's got a lot of meat on the bone.
So much meat.
You can only I don't want to be here for 5 hours
Also, this is you can label this episode the buzzkill episode.
Well, yeah, I mean, Bob, you are Bob
shits all over every theory and says, "Oh man, no, you guys are cooked." You know, you're doing that old school thing with VCRs where you like pause the movie and you lean in really close and you're like, "Can I see the seams in the rubber mask and the alien?" You know, like doing stuff like that. You know, it's like, "Oh, wait a minute, that alien has a zipper in the back of their thing. Maybe that meat." No, it's just a costume.
Hey Bob, that's this why. Is what I've had to deal with all season long. All it's season
fun,
long.
Though. It is fun though. You hear me go on about the video game thing. I'm like, you know, I'm like it is a mystery. It's a genuine mystery. I just think the mystery is in the world. I don't think the mystery is in the characters.
Okay.
I don't think anyone is suspect, frankly. I'm going to go on the record and say, okay, I don't find anyone suspect. In fact, I to me, if there's a mole or if someone's suspect or if someone's villainous or if someone's being shifty, it kind of screws up the show for me personally a little bit. Like I want this to be a show about a really weird, bizarre, messed up, maybe magical, maybe otherworldly type place where regular, ordinary people from our world get put into.
Yeah. And
it could be an experiment. It could be a game. It could be great. I'm chill with all of that stuff, but I don't think there's a whole lot of value or import in dissecting the characters and trying to figure out their allegiances and their, you know, this one's on the inside. This one knows something. Like, I don't know. Like to me, that makes it a different kind of show than the one that I think it is. And maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll be totally wrong.
I just think she's weird, but let me just ask you this. When you were getting ready to execute your lines from the script, could you ad lib or did you have to say them as written?
I mean, I said them as written. I mean, you have to remember too that my stuff was being done very much close to the beginning,
right?
And at best, like a couple of months into production. So, I mean, I think there were a few little bits and pieces that got changed and some different words. There are things that get cut.
Yeah.
There are things that get cut. There are things that get filmed that then get cut. There are things that get edited in ways that you just don't foresee, that you can't anticipate. Like when you're delivering your performance, you don't necessarily know what the thing is going to look like. And honestly, I don't think even the writing and the directors and they don't even know. Like there's a whole other process of putting the story together in editing after the fact, after it's done. So it's not really like the people on the ground in the moment. You're just shaping the clay that's going to get turned into the experience that the viewers get put into. Like to go all the way back to that point in the process and look at what an actor is doing on the day and say, "Oh, everybody there knows. Everybody knows
what's going on."
When we get John in the chair here where you are, which is not happening anytime soon, we will make sure we're like, "We know that you know that we know."
John Griffin's not going to say squat.
He's not going to say he doesn't want to take our call.
No, he's not going to tell you a word. I will say like my hope, but really truly my expectation is that he's got something cooked up in his head that is really interesting that will amount to something much more than just a puzzle room to solve your way out of.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's just a puzzle room to solve your way out of, it will end up being kind of uninteresting, I think in the end.
I agree with that.
It's gotta be more than that. That's why I say I don't think there's a lot of import to the theories that little things that characters do from moment to moment contain a whole lot of clues or a whole lot. I really don't think that's just my opinion. I don't think they do.
So Bob, one of your fans wants to tell you that you shouldn't be the showrunner. They shouldn't have you doing your promo of the show because your optimism of this is.
Well, we're getting. I. This is an interesting point, though. This is interesting. I actually think that I'm giving the storytellers a lot more credit and praise as storytellers because I think they're doing something much more interesting than just building a roller coaster ride.
I agree. Right?
A roller coaster ride. You get on it. You have thrills and chills, and you scream and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, oh my god, is that a thing? Like, and then off you go. Like,
I mean, I just hope that they're. Whether it's a 5-year run or a 3, whatever year run it is, they get to one, tell their story, but two, that they get a chance to make sense so that the viewers feel like, is it something that they did to get there? I'd love to know why they're there. I'm not necessarily how they get out, but why? What's the common thread? Yeah. Because the one thing about this show that's driving me nuts is, they're from all over the country and they all see the same. They all see the same
tree.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by it. I really am. Yeah. I'm truly. Yeah. And I'm totally in for it. And I'm dying for season 3, like everybody else. Yeah. And I wish it was starting next week. Like anyone who thinks that I'm anyone who thinks I'm shitting on the show is mistaken.
I don't think you are at all.
What I'm saying. Yeah. I just
you are at all.
Yeah. And again, as I said, the theories are fun and I would not dissuade someone from making theories and come. If that's the fun part of it, if that's the fun game of it.
I know it's not the same.
Ankui!
Oh, he's like the Ankui master today. So folks listening to the podcast, every time we say Ankui, we encourage you to take a drink so that Bob can come back to civilization from Canada because he's still drunk from Canada Day. Because it's an all month long deal.
Months long.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I hope that it is just some kind of supernatural thing, like a trap that they all fell into. You know, like, I know it's really odd. You know, Arizona, Detroit, Florida, Texas, like, you know, Montana, they're all, you know, their origin is so different. But I mean, there could be vortexes that open at particular times. And if you're there, you end up in this place.
Yep.
You know,
Yeah, absolutely.
So pay your taxes or you don't go in the void.
Has nothing to do with taxes, but I mean, like
now there is something that happened this season that so I was of the view that it was random that it was just like okay maybe there's an opening quote unquote opening that moves and it's just kind of moving around and there's some randomness to it like a bingo ball machine cool that's neat something happens at the beginning of season 2 that doesn't necessarily disprove that as a theory, but it does.
Ankui!
Everybody take a drink, folks.
I've got a drop.
She's got one drop left. That's and he looks like he's saying,
I just, during the freeze moment, I took a shot of tequila. So that's what I do. Yeah. The thing that happens at the beginning of season 2, that to me is seismic.
Yeah.
It's truly seismic is, Christy's fiance showing up.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, well, wait a minute. What are the odds? Like, what are the, and they talk about it on the show. It's not like the characters of the show don't seize on that. There are a couple that do. Right. Yeah. But to me, that's sort of like, okay, that is a significant piece of evidence about something that I hope gets like, again, to your point, Alex, like as a viewer, I hope that gets addressed in a substantive, meaningful way. I hope that's not something that it was like, we conveniently did this so that Christy has a love triangle issue. Like to me, that's a little bit too convenient given the odds that someone like her is going to show up one day on a yeah. bus.
It's because
she was brought there, or it's like, that's the part that makes me go, okay, from a probability standpoint, this is significant.
Yeah. And it's not impossible, but right. it could happen. Right. But the fact that it opened, you know, in the same area more than once in a short period of time, like that's only been 6 months.
Right.
You know,
even,
and then
even, I mean, even the same area is only part of it. Like yeah. even if the odds, once you consider the odds that it opens in the same area, given yeah. how much territory it has to operate in, what are the odds that at that moment, someone connected to one of these other characters just happens to be there at that exact moment? Like it is something that implies more of a connection to the characters tethered to the outside world. But again, the sample size is small. It's just Christy. Right. We haven't seen it from anybody else. So, yeah.
Well, there's a theory going around.
Yeah.
There is that other theory going around that Elgin is the baby of Fatima and
Ellis,
because he saw that in the bathroom that's the other thing. There should be no tubs. There should be no bodies of water in from, because nothing. And the other thing is, Donna is not allowed to leave Colony House at night, because every right. time she does, her friggin' exactly. real husband does so much goddamn shit.
Yeah.
Dale is on the shit list with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone should Cliff be taking
might be
notes.
A good guy, but yeah. Dale's on the shit list, man. Yeah. That guy can't God. Find. He's got such a hard on for friggin' Cordy. I mean, for Ellis. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, he's a wily commuter. You got to keep your eye on that guy. He would be a problem. He would definitely be a problem. Yeah, I wouldn't be leaving his door. But no, it's true. I always thought that theory was reaching a little bit too. I didn't see, again, although, I mean, that might be interesting, but again, as with the mole thing, my question would be like, well, why? Like what?
Yeah.
What purpose, I could see that happening more than the whole mole thing, because mm-hmm. that would create a whole time thing to that mystical stuff. That said, and I do want to kind of shift it, because I know a lot of it was a big deal with the, with the show this season. Was so last season, meaning season one, when Boyd and Sarah were in the woods, they right. saw the tree of bottles.
Yeah.
They broke a bottle that believed was her brother's. And one of the fears was cicadas. And that's what kind of possibly was the
cicadas upon them.
Yeah, it brought the cicadas upon them. First off, what did you guys think of cicadas in general as a terror thing? And what do you think of that theory of those bottles are dead people's dream or fears? That's kind of an interesting twist when you look at it.
Yeah. Could totally be. Like I would buy it as a, you know, again, this is my thing. Maybe somebody would be pretty quick or ready to shit all over this, but like to me, it's like, well, that if that's one of the rules of the game that they're in, you know, that, you know, different characters have different character profiles, and that if a certain thing happens, that character profile manifests in some sort of threat. It's like, well, it sounds pretty programmable to me, and something that I might expect to see in a write-up, you know, about a video game or something like that. Like to me, there's something compelling and interesting about that. That seemed so deliberate to me, that like Sarah relating the cicadas back to her brother's experience. Like if I was taking close notes, that definitely would be something that I'd write down.
They did have dates in them. They did have dates in them. I'm not saying that they didn't have the dates in them. I'm just saying that was something that people were kind of saying. And folks, we're not answering all the mysteries. We don't know what the writers are going to do or whatever. We're just kind of bringing Bob in to shit on everything. I mean, justify everything. And then we'll bring somebody so else that wants to just go down those deep dives as well. I just thought that the cicadas were a kind of an interesting little thing, because they're the most disgusting things ever.
It was out of left field for me. Like I, you know, there's such a regional there's got to be a real regional aspect to that too, right? Like, I certainly don't think of cicadas as, I mean, I don't think we have them here. Like,
they're not passports. That's why.
Yeah, that's right. They're not, they don't have dual citizenship. We have crickets. And yeah. I don't think we're talking about the same insect,
no.
But we
certainly, no. Oh, cicadas no.
are certainly not something we experience. They're like, so they're,
like this big, Bob, like they're big.
Yeah. Huge.
Like I saw the exoskeleton of a molted cicada on a tree. And I'm like, oh my God, that's more than I want to see.
I had
one fly into me. I thought it was a bird that hit me. Yeah. But I know that we've had them in Massachusetts when I lived there, and they're definitely here in Georgia because that's where I've seen the exoskeleton and had one fly into me. Like they look like birds when they're flying. They're that big.
Mm. Do they swarm like that? Do they swarm people?
I've only seen one or two. Like I really haven't seen a lot of them.
No, when I was a kid, they come every like 27 years. They like hibernate, but we had them when I was a kid. It was awful. I mean, they were everywhere and they're big. They were big suckers.
They're big. They are. They're really big.
And they're like this big and they would run into you and boom. And they have like they don't swarm. They're just everywhere. And they're like, they're kind of like the most annoying things ever.
Oh, they're loud.
It's like when the Red Sox won. It's just the most annoying thing ever. Yeah. You know? But no, but they're not like useless. Fan. They're just not, they're useless things. Yeah. But
it is an interesting, it's a very interesting choice to use those. And it was a real, it was one of those things where, I mean, the sound was interesting. There was an interesting implication of using cicadas as this sort of threatening element, which really only lasts for a few episodes. It's not like it's there from the very beginning, but it's because they generate a sound that can go away.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but I did like that moment. Like I remember in the last episode, the moment where it's like, oh, the sound is gone.
Yeah.
The characters kind of take note and they're like, oh, we don't hear that. Like as a viewer, you caught it just before the character did, where you're like, oh, that sound isn't there. That means something has passed. Some threat of some kind has passed, and maybe now there's going to be something new. Which I would say makes this season distinct from the end of season one, which is that we really don't. The end of season one, you had the rain, you had the tower, and then you had the bus pull up, and it was a bit of a cliffhanger.
Well, like
the cliffhanger at the end of this season is a cliffhanger for Monica, but it's not a cliffhanger for everyone. Like certainly they're going to wonder where she went, assuming she did go somewhere, but everyone, I don't know where everyone else stands.
Well, like something else happened in season one that was kind of important.
Mm.
You became an unemployed actor again.
Yeah, that's true. Although I mean, you gotta
control your drinking better. Come on, Bob.
I had other stuff. I had other stuff too.
Yeah. You just said Harold. I don't have time. I know.
There was much of a cliffhanger beyond Tabitha. Like Boyd solves the music box problem.
Well, yeah, there is Jade. Jade's lost in the cave.
Well, he's just in the cave.
He's like, just down there.
He's just in the cave. Yeah. But like, he's just in the cave. It's not really a cliffhanger. The cicadas stop. And then the three.
Ellis and Fatima got married, and Fatima got married, and Dawn is there.
Okay, so let's just take stock.
You could do a time jump after this season,
and
nothing really would be disrupted.
Yeah.
No, yes.
You couldn't last season. You had to pick up with that bus, but this season you could.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I got a couple of quick fire things because we're getting on the 2 hour mark and.
Crazy, too long.
Oh my god! Yeah,
and we haven't even like scratched the surface. And folks, if you're listening to this, we're gonna come back and do this again because there's just too much. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning for Bob. And
I don't know if Bob wants to come back again.
Or well, he's good to go. What are you talking about?
No, all right. No, but that's it. We're talking with Bob Mann, the most optimistic.
I would love if you were here every week.
Love it.
We're talking to Bob Mann, the most optimistic, theoristic member of our team today. And
loving this show and loving and just digging the show. I'm down just because I'm down for criticisms and down for shitting on theories and being like, oh, you guys too much time in your hand or whatever. None of that means I don't love the show. I'm loving the show. I'm getting a kick. I love the performances. I hope people keep coming back and be given stuff to do. It's just, I love
amazing.
It. And it is as you two have no doubt discovered in your own way up to this point, but there are some really, really lovely people involved in making
the show. They're all amazing, honestly.
Yeah, they really are. Such
we have
nice
been blessed.
Work. Yeah.
We have been blessed.
Yeah.
From top to bottom. And I say this, Liz was the nicest one of the bunch in terms of this. She said yes first. Yeah. And then some guy Bob said yes. And then the rest of it is history. I mean, everybody's been wonderful.
Such nice people. Yeah. And talented people. They're talented. Well, they're talented and they're
You know, this week I've been on set with Ann Dowd for a couple of days, and I think Alex and I have compared Liz Saunders to her multiple times when we've been talking. And I was having a conversation with Ann, and all of a sudden I'm just like, oh my God, to have Ann Dowd and Liz Saunders in a buddy road trip comedy might be funny. That might be hysterical.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, well, why not? I keep saying to everybody, there shouldn't be Harold that's nominated. It should be Liz and Scott and Harold. Because I really do believe, maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid too much, but I think that they put the work in this year to deserve some
good performances.
Yeah, some great praise.
Scott about killed me. He just like the man child. You know, and then confronting his past like that just about killed me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was compelling.
Beautiful.
Okay. Yeah. So we really didn't even get to Victor that much, but we're going to get to him next time. Cause I, like I said, but I just have a couple other things that I'd love for you guys and the viewers to kind of think about. You've got the logo that Jade's been looking at all season long.
Yeah. Yeah.
The logo at the hospital is very similar. It's very similar. I there's not a lot of, it's just similar. I think like you guys believe that she hasn't left the world, but she's in another part of it. I think the boy in white needs to get his mom and gets the crap beat out of him. Cause I don't know if he's good. Do you think the boy in white is good or bad? Both of
that's
you.
That's a great question. I've not been given any, I don't think we've been given enough information.
Yeah, that's like, what
to know, if he's, to know if he's good or bad. Yeah,
it's tough because when you look at symbolism, white is always the good guy, and there's just something about it that is telling me that the color is betraying us.
That we're being misdirected.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah,
for sure. I don't know what it is. I really don't know. I mean, it's just a feeling, a hunch, whatever it is, but there's just something about it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he thinks he's 100% evil. But that's okay.
Right. Yeah.
He's not evil. He's evil. Do you think, that, we should have more Victor backstory next season?
I do find his whole thing interesting. Like he definitely is a mystery kind of to be unfurled a little bit. There's some interesting things going on with him for sure that I would love to know more about. Like I'm really interested in knowing more about him for sure.
I mean, how cool was it that he has his own trailer filled with cookies?
Well, not filled with cookies, but
filled with all sorts of stuff. I think we're uncooing Bob. There we go. He's back.
There we go. I'm back.
No, but how cool is it that he has his own trailer? You know,
he inhabits. He's the one character who inhabits more of the world than than anybody else. Like he knows about things. He knows where to go. He knows where to find stuff. He's got stashes. He's got drawings. He's got memories. Like that's why I say, like, I think that, you know, put him together with another character, likewise situated, suddenly you start unlocking things. The barrier to doing that, which serves the story, which serves the narrative, is that he is still kind of stunted.
Emotionally,
and he's very traumatized, and he's not interested in reliving it. You know, he's not interested in going through it again, as one is when they go through something like that, or as some people are, I guess. And so that's what's driving his closed mouthedness. Something has got to come along and open him up. And I feel like it's going to be someone like Sarah, or it's going to be someone. You know, it's not going to be a character who's trying to get answers.
Do you think Victor's story being exposed could cause more spoilers?
I mean, I think so. Yeah. Like, I think there's stuff that's gone on with him that is going to fill out the story of what's going on there and may be helpful. But, you know, yeah, I feel like where we're going with that particular story is that someone's got to call. Like, there's a neat little juxtaposition between what Jade does and what Tabitha does relative to Victor. Jade's looking for answers.
Yeah.
And he apprehends that Victor is the key to answering some of his questions. And that's how he treats him. He treats him as a means to an answer. And so there's no, you know, like he has a promising start with the whole violin playing and stuff like that, but he eventually pushes Victor to a place where Victor clams up. But then Tabitha comes along and she kind of treats him a little bit more like a wounded human being. And suddenly we start getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, so, like that's like someone's got to kind of scoop him up. And right. Like that's why he's so taken with the little guy with,
Ethan,
because he's like he's more like a peer, right? Like he's on the same level with him, so he's not gonna push him in the same way that the grown-ups are gonna push him. And I find it compelling. I feel like it's got a lot of narrative potential. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved the when Ethan gave him a picture of himself. He drew
adorable.
A picture
of him.
That was a cute scene. So and he wouldn't take it, and he's like, oh, "That's only for dead people." But. Yeah. So Bob, we're going to wrap it up. What are some of the things that you're promoting these days besides King and Prawn?
Oh man, I don't know. We're hoping to. I don't know when we're going to have season two of King and Prawn done, but I'm working on the music for that, and I wrote a decent chunk of it. And I was in another show that filmed back in May, which I don't know when that assembly is going to be done, but I think the fall. So that will be on Bell here in Canada and on Out TV here in Canada. And then I have a film project coming up, next month, and over the next little bit that I'm working on. And,
have everything on your website? Like, are you still doing dates? Cause I know you do dates. Sometimes you do dates for,
you know, this summer is a bit up all over the place. So I don't have any dates right now for any comedy stuff. I really don't have anything lined up. I've sort of stepped back a little bit because of how unpredictable my next month and a half is. The last thing I did was a couple of weeks ago. And then I said, okay, I'm not sure. I just don't want to commit to anything or sign up for any gigs or shows because I don't know what July and August are gonna look like.
I totally understand. But I totally
understand. We got shows like Sullivan's Crossing, and I don't know if my character is done on that show or not. I don't think he is, but I don't actually know that for sure. So I've gotta leave some space for that. But and then we hopefully will be working on, you know, season three of King and Pawn in the fall. So, you know, that might be a whole thing unto itself. And I've been involved in the writing.
We might just have to cover it, you know, cover it.
You have to find it, Alex. At least Sullivan Crossing is coming on Hulu.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming to see you, and it's going to be on Hulu. Yeah. We'll be able to see it.
Yeah. It'll be great.
I think we'll be able to get a copy once it's done. I don't know.
Yeah. And the show Moonshine that was.
And Cooey. So yeah, folks, just so you know, we're going to be wrapping up in just a minute. Whenever the
He's back.
The satellites come back from Canada.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back. I'm good.
He's back.
No, yeah. But that's great. I mean, it sounds like you got a lot of stuff on the back burner or on the front burner, and you got a graduating son, I think I saw.
Yeah.
In high school last week, and I got a kid who graduated elementary school last week. And
awesome. Yeah,
all kinds of
congratulations.
Fun stuff. Thanks. So
what's the first thing you tell your kid when he graduates elementary school? Get a job.
Yeah. Start doing your own taxes.
Pretty much.
Here are the forms. Fill them out. Yeah. Here's how you cook eggs.
But folks, if you enjoy what Bob is doing, please check him out on Sullivan's Crossing and all the other stuff that he's doing. If you enjoyed what we're doing, you know, hit that subscribe button just like we did before. Hit the bell so that you can get all of our stuff, because we're going to have a bunch of interviews that are coming up. We've got a really special one that we're not going to release yet, but it is a pretty special one with it's Bob. He's coming back again. No, it's somebody. It's somebody a little bit smaller than Bob when it comes to the marquee. But no, it's going to be fun. And Bob, thank you so much for everything that you've done for us. And I mean that. Anytime we've had any type of posting, you repost stuff. You've been one of our biggest cheerleaders, and God knows we need all the help we can get. And after this, it's only going to get bigger because your positive attitude with the theories.
Yeah, that's great. And I want to say I celebrate all the fan. Like I'm not complaining. I love how many people are into this and debating about it and talking about it. That's never a bad thing. It's only a good thing, because it means people are watching, they're interested, and they're having a lot of fun, having a good time. So yeah, nothing but positive vibes around.
Well, folks, it's getting late, so the bell's ringing. So let our famous roller coaster constructor take us out.
Get you home. Let's go. Come on, get in your house. Let's go. Come on.